Women on the Inside, Incarcerated U.S. Women and HIV/AIDS. Stephanie is a legislative analyst at the MyTech Corporation in Silver Spring, Maryland. She has worked on HIV/AIDS policy for the past 4 years, including working with the Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition in Atlanta, Georgia, during her time in law school. Ms. Winston's other areas of focus are childhood obesity, tobacco, and cancer.
Hello. Thank you guys all for coming out today. So today I'm going to talk to you about incarcerated women and HIV in the United States. This is a group that is often overlooked, as prisons were primarily built for men, and the services that are provided are often meant for a male population. Just a brief outline of what we're going to go through. I'm going to give you some background information on women in prisons and HIV status. We're going to talk about some legal issues surrounding testing in states. I am a lawyer, so I'm going to focus more on the legal side of it, but then we will also look at some issues particular to women's health and then some possible interventions to improve the health status of women in prisons. So here's some background information for you. Women are being incarcerated at higher rates than men, especially women of color. The total number of women incarcerated in prison in 2010 was 112,822. African American females had an imprisonment rate nearly 3 times higher than Caucasian women and nearly 2 times higher than Hispanic women. These women are often injection drug users, sex workers, and other women without access to health care. Due to this lack of prior health care, these women often do not know their HIV status, and as you can tell from the high-risk groups, these women are also likely to be HIV positive. So here are some statistics on HIV in prisons and jails. As you can see, at year-end 2009, 1,756 women held in state or federal prisons were HIV positive or had confirmed AIDS, and this number actually has gone down since 2008, so that is a positive sign. Incarcerated women are twice as likely as incarcerated men to be HIV positive, and 15 times more likely to be HIV positive than non-incarcerated women. And then also, as you can see here, female prisoners are more likely to be HIV positive than male prisoners. So these numbers are pretty staggering, but these are only the reported data, and as we're going to talk about now, testing in prisons isn't very uniform across the country, so the actual numbers could even be higher than this. I will talk a little bit about testing. So CDC has given guidelines on HIV testing implementation for correctional settings in January of 2009. All prisons are different, and the populations that they serve are also different, so it's important to take the guidelines and adapt them for the individual prison system in which one is working. Privacy and confidentiality are extremely important when dealing with HIV testing. It's crucial to always give the test in a private and isolated setting and to assure that the status of the individual remains completely confidential. Results should also be given in a private setting, and the incarcerated woman should be made as comfortable as possible. And also, we'll talk about counseling a little bit more later, but it's important that at all stages of the testing that counseling is provided, whether the results are positive or negative. And also, depending on if the prison has conjugal visits, partner notification may be part of the counseling that occurs. So these are the different types of testing that can occur in the intake process. Most prisons already have a general health screening, and HIV testing can easily be incorporated into this process. Many public health professionals recommend opt-out testing, which you see here, and that is when all individuals are offered the test unless they choose to not take it. This assures that more people are tested, so that is why it is preferred by public health. However, there is a concern that individuals may feel pressured into taking the test, so it's important to not have any repercussions as somebody chooses to not take the test. Repeated screenings are also recommended, as incarcerated women may be infected with HIV during incarceration. And then these are just some recommended testing strategies from CDC, and this presentation is focusing just on prisons, but it's just important to notice that whatever type of facility you are dealing with, testing should always be an option. All right, so now I'm going to go through some different state laws that have testing that will affect what is done in the prisons in that state. It's interesting to note that there is no federal law on pre- or post-testing, so that's when somebody is coming into prison or before they are released from prison. But many states do have laws on pre-imprisonment testing, post-testing, testing upon request, testing after an incident has occurred, or testing for individuals with certain risk factors. And while there are other types of testing, these are the 5 that we're going to focus on for state laws. So as I'm sure most of you know, under the police power, states have the right or the power to create laws on testing that promote the public health. And so prisons in that state, in theory, need to follow the laws of that state. So this is just showing you how many states have each type of test. So 23 states have laws on pre-testing, 6 states have laws on post-testing, 47 states and the federal government have laws upon request of the individual. 42 states have laws that require testing for incident-dependent situations, and 18 states have testing for risk factors of individuals. So these laws, so I'm just going to go through some examples from each of these states. I don't have time to tell you about each and every law from the states because that would take us all day. So we're not going to do that. But so I'll just give you a few examples. In California, laws on the books cover testing upon request and incident-dependent testing. So one example is that custodial and law enforcement personnel are required to report certain situations and may request and be granted a confidential test for HIV of an incarcerated person if the officer has reason to believe that they came into contact with the blood or semen of an individual or had any contact that would result in an HIV infection. So they have to have a good medical reason for this test. You can't just randomly say, I would like an HIV test for this person. An incarcerated individual can also request the test upon an incident occurring. And they must always file a report if they are going to do a test. In Texas, testing is required in all 5 of the categories I talked about earlier. And one example is that incarcerated individuals may be tested for HIV at any time, but must be tested upon intake if there is no record of a positive test, or when the individual is eligible for release from prison. So that's Texas. In Illinois, testing is allowed upon request, if incident-dependent, or if certain risk factors are present. So one example is upon intake, the State Department of Corrections must offer the incarcerated individual the option of being tested for infection with HIV with no copayment. So that's an example where it's not required that everybody be tested, but they have to have the option of somebody opting in to take the test. In Florida, testing is required upon release, upon request, or if incident dependent. If the incarcerated person's HIV status is unknown, then a test is to be performed 60 days before release. And if they have a positive HIV test, then the State Department of Health and the County Health Department where the person is moving has to be notified of that person's status. And finally, in New York, testing is required upon request for incident-dependent situations or if risk factors exist. And testing in New York is explicitly not allowed without written informed consent, and this must be recorded in the individual's medical file. Those are just some examples of state laws that could be implemented in other states as well. So now we will go and talk about some issues and challenges that affect incarcerated women. So the services that are provided in prisons are often, as I said earlier, meant for men, but they have been adapted for women. So often these are not specifically created for women, which can cause all sorts of problems because women have a unique set of health issues that are different from those, as I'm sure we all know, that men go through. So a lot of these issues that are listed here do affect men, like alcohol and drug abuse, nutrition, diet, aging. A lot of them do, but they affect women in different ways, and that needs to be taken into account when providing services for women. Incarcerated women are often parents and have left their children on the outside when they are incarcerated. 61% of incarcerated women are mothers compared to 53% of incarcerated men who are fathers. So that just shows the difference of their situation when coming into prison. So the rest of those are you can see for yourselves. All right. So now we've gone through the problem. Women are being incarcerated at higher rates and yet do not have access to health services that meet their specific needs. In particular, women who are at especially high risk of being HIV positive are not being tested, either because of a lack of state law requiring it or because of a lack of an implementation of those laws. Therefore, not only is the health of these women put seriously at risk, but upon release, the public health is also threatened if women do not know their HIV status. So now we'll talk about some interventions. We've already talked about testing, so we won't go into that due to lack of time. And we'll talk about education briefly and then about counseling and treatment for HIV-incarcerated women. So education, It is important that women are educated on transmission and proper treatment for HIV. And it's also important that when providing these services and providing programs that the individuals are talked to and you get feedback from them to know what kind of programs are beneficial to the incarcerated women, so you're not just telling them things that you think are useful. One really good example is the Hyacinth AIDS program. They provide a gender-specific prison reentry services to ex-offenders for over 15 years. And they provide services for a wide range of areas, but one area that's really great are their health education services that they provide. So that's a good example if you're looking for a model. And then also, we thought it was important for personnel who work with incarcerated women who are HIV positive to also receive education, just on awareness, cultural competency, and then transmission education, because it is still an issue that a lot of people do not know about. Counseling and treatment for HIV incarcerated women. So the court case at the top, the Estelle v. Gamble case, this case is the reason that incarcerated individuals are the only people in the United States with a constitutional right to health care. So if a woman finds out that she's HIV positive, or a man, while in prison, then they must be given treatment with ARVs. So that's just important to know, because a lot of people don't know that you have to get health care when you're in prison. Also, as I mentioned earlier, counseling for individuals who are HIV positive is very important, especially in correlation with treatment. And it's important to have treatment under control before release, because otherwise it is more likely that the individual will never get the care that they need. So especially if somebody doesn't have access to health care outside of prison and they're not put on a regimen before they are released, then it's very unlikely that they will ever adhere to a program. So sort of to reiterate, interventions upon release are testing at release, which we think is important, access to healthcare services, and then also housing and employment are just big issues that women have to deal with when leaving prison. So just making sure that all of these factors come together is going to be the best possible situation for someone being released to stay adhering to a care program. So it's important to know that comprehensive case management is key to prison reentry services. And as I mentioned earlier, the Hyacinth AIDS Foundation has a number of programs, four which are listed here, and we don't really have time to talk about them in detail, but they're just some good examples of programs that are provided for ex-offenders who are being released from prison. So from these programs, some of the lessons learned were the importance of peer-based and gender-responsive prisoner community reentry services for women, structured models of discharge planning work, the need to bridge gaps in reentry services for women who are being released, and the likelihood of successful community reentry and reintegration for ex-offenders increases when comprehensive case management services are provided with a multifaceted team approach. There's some lessons. So some recommendations that we have, just from all of the research that we did, one is to support the development of gender-specific models for behavioral interventions and reentry programs for women affected by HIV, to support the expansion of prison health systems to include comprehensive services for women, and to implement policies to ensure confidential HIV testing and counseling services, post-release linkage to care, and HIV training and education for prison personnel. And so just to close, as you can see, there is a unique opportunity to intervene in the lives of incarcerated women, especially in terms of their HIV status, and this public health intervention would make a major difference in individuals and the public health. So either by looking to create laws on testing at the state or federal level, or by creating programming that addresses the unique needs of women in prison, it's just important for public health professionals to have a variety of opportunities to intervene on this issue. So thank you for your time, and I guess we'll save questions for the end.